Up next, Luna talks with Anna Paulina Luna, part of the Gingrich 360 Network.
Protecting babies shouldn't be a matter of debate. But Planned Parenthood wants you to think unborn children are just a clump of cells to be disposed of at our whim. This is the definition of dehumanizing, and it's evil. Today, with abortion back in the headlines, I tackle our culture's most emotionally charged issue head on. This is Luna Talks with Anna Paulina. Welcome back to this Sunday's episode of Luna Talks with me, your host, Anna Paulina Luna. As we know, this last week, the abortion debate kicked back up again. I'm old enough to remember during the Justice Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings that Washington, D.C. was pretty much set on fire due to sponsored protests and basically organized demonstration against Brett Kavanaugh because he is a pro-life person. Now, I can tell you that I was actually there in person, and when I was there, I saw that although the media cameras were focusing and pointing at people that were talking with the loudspeakers and different demonstrators, behind the scenes, much of that had been organized and was being funded by Planned Parenthood. I bring that up because, as you know, a majority of the services performed by Planned Parenthood are abortions. And it should be brought up to especially the topic of discussion when we know that Planned Parenthood recently came out to say that they condemned Margaret Sanger. And essentially, Margaret Sanger was the person who not only founded Planned Parenthood, but was definitely a eugenicist, meaning that she was trying to basically stifle the minority birth rate in order to create a pure race. Someone like that, in no way, shape, or form, should be running any organizations, especially organizations that claim to be humanitarian and in the best interest of women. Obviously, we know that Planned Parenthood was started and founded with very, very evil intentions. But today, what's happening, looking at it from a legal perspective in the state of Texas, is totally fine. And I say that because the way that our founding fathers engineered law essentially allows every state and the individuals within those states to best determine what laws should govern them. Meaning, if the people elect the legislators and the legislators vote on an initiative or a bill to basically say that they do not want abortion in that state at all, or in this case, abortion after a certain amount of time, then what that means is that those people have trusted those elected officials to pass that ruling. So when you have these outside organizations trying to push these federal mandates and saying that basically it won't be allowed in other states, that's completely false. It's ultimately up to the state to decide. And frankly, it is true to say that repealing Roe v. Wade would not absolutely outlaw abortion altogether. It would simply give that ability back to the states to decide, present the scientific evidence that has definitely come forward since that initial ruling, and basically allow it to be so that those states would ultimately determine what is best for them. That's the legal argument. Now, I can tell you that from my personal opinion, and I actually filmed a very personal episode, I think very early on in this podcast, about my personal experience and why I am pro-life. But I can tell you that with my education, so I have a scientific background, and in taking certain courses, specifically those known as developmental biology, genetics courses, all of them, what I realized is that there's a scientific foundation for why you should not terminate life in the womb. And then also, in addition to that, I am a Christian. And I get really frustrated with other Christians when I hear them say, well, it should be left up to the woman to decide. And I say that if you read the Bible and you look at different scripture that's quoted, you realize that in no way, shape, or form would God be saying, yes, you got pregnant, now please terminate that child's life. That's not how it works, especially from a Christian perspective. And I think that people, especially pastors, especially priests that push that narrative, I think that they're wrong. And I think that they need to go back to the Bible. And I think that other Christians, other Catholics really should be calling these people out, because when you are in a leadership position, you really influence a lot of people. And especially when you're in a faith position, you have the ability to really, I think, change someone's moral compass. And that's something that we should all be holding our elected officials, as well as our faith leaders, accountable to. So over my last couple of years working, especially in the conservative sector, I have come across some very incredible organizations. I've covered episodes following ones that are environmentally focused. I've covered ones that are focused on humanitarian missions, and now I'm going to cover one that's focusing on the pro-life mission. Their organization that I was fortunate enough to connect with, I'd say probably about 3.5 years ago, and the name of the organization is Let Them Live. And you think about that, and I mean, it just makes too much sense, but in today's day and age, you really do have an entire generation that has been convinced that children in the womb are, quote unquote, clump of cells, and that's just not true. And that dehumanizing of a child, that dehumanizing of a baby allows organizations like Planned Parenthood, it allows for these very, very progressive anti-human legislation to go forward because people don't think of children as children anymore. They think of them as expendable. And when you saw what happened a couple of years ago with basically the bill in New York City, that's one of the most progressive abortion legislations in US history, you realize that if we can't protect the most vulnerable in society, who have we become? And this debate on abortion really should be based on the scientific evidence. And I cannot harp that enough. So when you go after this conversation that I'm going to have with Emily from letthemlive.org, but when you go to social media or you go to your family or you are at dinner with friends and you have this discussion with people, especially people that don't believe in God, you should be really using the scientific evidence to back up your argument for why you are pro-life. And I really encourage you to go back to, I think it was episode 2 I did, where I really got into the scientific evidence on what pro-life is and what constitutes life. So without further ado, I am going to be bringing in Emily. Emily is someone who, if she was liberal or if she was running a pro-choice organization, she'd probably be on the cover of every single magazine. She's done some incredible stuff. And because of the fact that she is a pro-lifer, because of the fact that she is a young and beautiful conservative woman, of course, the media won't give her the time of day. But as you know, here on Luna Talks, we don't care about the media. So I decided to bring her on. Her organization has done some incredible things, and incredible things definitely focused on social media. We are seeing a large amount of push from Hollywood, from these big tech organizations to stifle and really make being pro-life not cool. But the thing is that her organization is so effective that I think that she's being targeted for suppression. But in addition to that, she's actually getting younger women involved in the discussion. And that's really important. Right now, I can tell you that when I was going to different colleges and universities and I was talking to some of these students, and you realize that part of the reason why some of these kids or some of these teenagers or young adults believe what they do is because they genuinely think that that's what they're supposed to believe. I don't necessarily know if they fully believe that other than they're just trying to fit in with their friends. And so when you have these groups bring young women together or even young men together to actually talk about it, and people realize that there's others in their peer group that believe the same thing, they are more inclined to speak up against the mainstream media and what Hollywood is telling them to believe. And that's incredibly important, especially because we are realizing that this next generation of young Americans that we're starting to see now hit the high school age demographic is apparently very conservative. Definitely more conservative than the Gen Z group, and definitely more conservative than the millennial group. And so it is going to become increasingly important that we help these organizations really get off the ground and continue to support them because they're going to be needed in the future. So right after this quick break, we will be back with Emily, the CEO of Let Them Live. You can find out more information at letthemlive.org. Sit tight. We'll be right back. I'm here today with Emily Burning. She is the CEO of Let Them Live. Emily, thank you so much for joining us today. What made you start Let Them Live?
Well, it all started, I was raised pro-life. And when I was in college, I thought, you know what, I'm going to kind of find out for myself what I believe about abortion. And then that's when I really started getting involved in the pro-life movement. That's when I started kind of skipping class to go, you know, protest abortion or have a table with Students for Life, things like that. And then once I graduated college, I actually met Nathan. I was working for the Leadership Institute, and that's how Nathan and I met. And I don't know, I just had this this thing inside of me. I don't know what it was, basically telling me like, you need to start a pro-life organization. So I basically got Nathan on board with that when we were dating, and just through a lot of prayer, we started Let Them Live, and we can get into it more later about how we came up with, you know, financially supporting women in crisis pregnancies. But essentially, you know, we just needed to figure out what wasn't being done in the pro-life movement already. There's a lot going on in the pro-life movement, you know, that from people working to in pregnancy centers to get women in ultrasounds, to people marching in the streets and lobbying and for legislation and things like that. But I was like, what else needs to be done? And there really is no, before Let Them Live, was no direct financial support for women that were walking into abortion clinics. And that's how we came up with the idea.
I mean, it's incredible because so many people, especially those that are in the pro-choice movement, they say, oh, well, you know, conservatives don't ever say, how are they going to financially care for these children? But your organization shatters that argument completely. And I think for a lot of younger women, especially, I mean, when they are in those circumstances, they're basically left to care for the child 100%. A lot of times, you know, there may or may not be a father in the picture. And so because of that, organizations like yours are so important. Would you say that you felt that you were called? Because I'm seeing, especially now from everyone that I've spoken to, people feel this calling to serve in different capacities. I feel like that's kind of what you're referencing. Were you being called to do this?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And even though Let Them Live is technically a secular organization, mostly everybody that makes up Let Them Live is a Christian. So I would 100% say that we were called to this. It took a lot of prayer to get Let Them Live where it is today. Certainly not something that we could just do on our own. In fact, right after Nathan and I got married, a couple months later, you know, we are newlyweds, really didn't have a lot of money in our bank account. The way that we discovered what Let Them Live should be doing, what our mission should be, after a lot of prayer, was we actually came across a woman who had been evicted in the middle of December, living in her car. I mean, it's freezing outside, and had an abortion scheduled because she just couldn't make it work. And 73% of women have abortions because of financial burden. I mean, that is a horrifying number. And the fact that we haven't like come up with a solution to that before Let Them Live came on the scene is so sad to me. But perhaps you were born for such a time as this is my favorite Bible quote. So, you know, we have to understand that we are all here for a purpose, and this happens to be our purpose for Nathan and I, that we started Let Them Live. And that first mom that we helped to Let Them Live, we actually emptied our personal bank account because we didn't have a lot of money, but we gave her what we had, and it was enough to cancel her abortion. And then that's when the light bulb went off in our heads, like, oh my gosh, there must be other women having abortions for this exact reason. And hey, I wonder if other people would donate to this cause, because as much as Nathan and I, you know, we have very big hearts and we want to help every single mom, our pockets aren't that deep. So that's how Let Them Live as it is today got started. We started crowdfunding and realizing that anybody could save a life, right? You don't have to give your whole life to the pro-life movement in order to save a life from abortion. You could donate $5, $10, $100 and know that that money is literally saving a life from abortion.
So there's also this aspect of Let Them Live that's kind of crossed over, I think, into pop culture. So you guys don't have boring logos. You have some really awesome, I think, graphic designers, and then also to your social media content, because I think it's helped impact the younger generation, especially for those of us that are online. I mean, how did that evolve? And like, how do you kind of make it so that this is a topic where people are actually now wanting to get involved with it? Because it's, for argument's sake, it's cool.
It is. I mean, and I think, you know, the nice thing is that the Gen Z, I believe, is becoming more and more, for lack of a better term, I guess they use the term woke, but woke about abortion. You know, they're becoming, they're a little bit more open. Their eyes are open to what abortion really is, and they're not afraid to speak out about it. But what we really have tried to do, and I have to give my husband a lot of credit for this, as well as our social media director, Haley, they've really taken showing people how you can turn your pro-life passion into action on our social media. I mean, I was just on it scrolling through Instagram earlier this morning, and I'm so impressed because there's no way that I could have done that. But the way it looks, it's just, it's like you want to just get involved by looking at our social media. And it comes from, you know, a lot of conservative Christian pro-life organizations haven't really utilized social media and technology and digital marketing very effectively. My husband actually worked for on the Ben Carson campaign, doing like texting and graphic design and stuff like that. So he was able to really tap into what do younger people, like, how do they communicate? You know, we're kind of leaving the days of direct mail or communicating that way and more through social media and the internet. And so really credit goes to them for tapping into that. And it's so smart because you have to communicate in the same way that people of younger generations are communicating it because they are the next generation. So for example, Live Action is doing a great job because they have like a TikTok, right? TikTok is like the new platform. And so just tapping into things like that is how we're going to keep our social media and keep staying relevant, basically.
So, I mean, when you see that big tech has been kicking off pro-life organizations off of Pinterest of all things, I mean, what is your response to that?
You know, I don't know. I just shake my head because I just feel like it's like if you're really going as far as Pinterest, and I remember what happened with Live Action, it's like, come on, guys, like really, it's kind of like, it's like, I don't know. You just are like, well, why Pinterest?
Really? Okay. I know of all things. It's like actually
desperate. Yeah.
Yeah. Pinterest is informational.
Yeah. You can tell they're desperate to get rid of this pro-life opinion, which honestly just further fuels like our desire to, you know, fight even harder against that. Censorship is a real thing. And it just sucks that they have to fight that way. But
so I want to get really quickly into what's happening in Texas. We know that in the last couple of days, we saw the left and the progressive left at that busted out the Handmaid's Tale costumes again. And they've been going to the Texas Capitol building and they are protesting. But we have to pause real quick for a quick commercial break. So everyone sit tight. We'll be right back after this quick break. So as we stated earlier, Emily, you have so many people that are now demonstrating against the legislation that Texas recently passed, and they're doing it in Handmaid's Tale costume. I mean, obviously you are pro-life, but what do you think is causing these women especially to become so vile in their demonstrations against the pro-life movement?
I think that women in the United States, especially like the pro-choice, pro-abortion women, have gotten a skewed sense of what it means to be oppressed, what it means to be having a war waged on you. That kind of a weird segue. I was watching Gilmore Girls and Rory's dorm room, you know, she has a poster that's like, stop the war on women. And it just made me think, I'm like, you know what, we're dealing with things, we're dealing with a lot of really, really sad things, like Afghanistan, for example. That is really sad for women and children over there. Not taking away a woman's, what they call a right to abortion. So I think they have a really skewed sense. And so when they dress up in the Handmaid's Tale, like costumes, and they think they're fighting this noble fight for women. But in reality, they're just completely ignoring the fact that abortion not only has, you know, only takes the life of a child, but has some really, really devastating lifelong effects on women. They really ignore those things. So I don't know. I think they have a completely skewed sense of what it means to be oppressed. And you know, I'm really glad about the Texas law. Does that mean that our fight is over, that we won? Absolutely not. This is a small victory. It is saving lives. I can't remember the exact statistic, but I think that Lila had said that it's already been saving like 100 lives a day. So, you know, as long as nobody's fighting this, lives are being saved. It's not the end. So we as pro-life people can't can't, you know, say, oh, yay, we won a victory. Let's, you know, kick our feet up and take a break. Women will still need help. Women are still going to be seeking abortions in surrounding states. So definitely a victory. We've already had one mom that we've been working with actually that went into an abortion clinic in Texas and was turned away. So the law is working. It's working, which is amazing. But we're not done yet. So it's kind of a two-sided coin.
Well, I feel like too, and so like obviously I'm going to ask you this next question in your own capacity and not as a spokesperson for your organization, but you have a lot of people of faith, right? Like priests, pastors that are now trying to say that it's ultimately up to the woman to decide. And I feel like, especially in places like Texas, where you have such a strong demographic of Hispanics that tend to be very, very faith-based, you have a strong Catholic perspective. And along with that faith comes the views that you love all children and that children are gifts by God. But for when you see pastors, especially pushing the pro-choice movement, do you think that that is a false interpretation of what the Bible really states?
Oh, 100%. It's such a cop-out. I think that, and this is just my personal opinion, but I mean, and I'm not going to know the hearts or minds of anybody in that position who's a pastor who is pro-choice. But in my opinion, I think that some people don't want to deal with what being pro-life means. Because when you're truly pro-life, it doesn't mean that you just get to sit around and talk the talk. You are having to face the fact that millions of unborn human beings are being killed brutally. You're having to face the fact that women are having mental and physical and emotional traumatic life changes after abortion. You're having to face something, and we live in a world of comfort. We really live in a world of comfort, right? You can get anything you want at the drop of a hat. You can, if you're feeling sad or you're just not wanting to do something, oh, you don't have to do it. You don't have to feel uncomfortable. You can always feel like you are just having the perfect, comfortable day in our culture. And abortion makes people uncomfortable because it is uncomfortable, because it is just the most horrific thing in the world. And so I personally believe that, you know, everybody interprets the Bible differently. And I think that people are like, oh, well, I interpret it to mean that God gave us choice. He did, but doesn't mean we have the choice to take somebody else's life. To me, pastors and other religious leaders who are pro-choice, it's just a cop-out because they don't want to deal with what comes with being pro-life and the actions that you have to take in order to ensure women and children are safe from abortion. And it's a lot. It's a lot. Our lives are now dedicated to this, you know? It's not an easy thing to give up your life to a cause. And I think that when you accept and you know what abortion does, it's hard, if not impossible, to turn away from that work. So it's just easier to close your eyes. It's just easier to say it's a woman's choice. It's easier to take the burden off of yourself and put it onto somebody else. Well, it's the woman's choice. It's the woman's choice. I don't need to tell her what to do. She can handle it on her own. It takes the burden off of you. It's sad, but I mean, that's my opinion.
No, I think that that was very well said, because you see a lot of people, especially I find it with younger men as well. They say, well, I don't feel that I can make that decision because that, you know, she has to carry the child, but it takes two to tango. And so it should be your decision as well, engaging in that conversation, especially when you're talking about potentially, I mean, that's half your child. So, you know, to kind of segue, do you think that the state of Texas providing such an incredible ruling on abortion, do you think that that is going to impact other conservative states and maybe set the precedence for how it's done? Because I can tell you that here in Florida, we have a conservative state legislature, both House and Senate, and then also too, I mean, we have a conservative governor. So for us, when we see Texas doing this, a lot of people are like, you know what, maybe we could do it here in Florida. Obviously, you have more of a national gauge on the situation because of your organization. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, and I don't know all the ins and outs of, like, I typically am not super involved with legislation and things like that, but I do know that the heartbeat bill that passed in Texas is a little bit different, which is why it's going unchallenged. I know that the Supreme Court has pretty much said, yeah, there's nothing we can do, which is awesome. And so I hope, it is my hope, that other states follow suit. It's going to be completely dependent on having leaders in each state having the backbone to actually do it, right? There's so many politicians that can talk the talk. But when it comes down to it, it's like, who's actually willing to do that? And we saw that in Texas. So we know it's possible. So, you know, I think we do need to just pray for the leaders that can make these decisions and hope that they really do, when they say they're pro-life, they really, really mean it. And, you know, does this mean that the fight is over in Texas? No, you know, there are still, the abortion pill is a really, really tricky thing. You know, there's a lot of, and that's a whole nother subject, but, you know, I just wanted to throw in there that, you know, a heartbeat bill is a huge step. It's a huge step, and it is already protecting lives, but, there's still a little window of time where, little humans are being aborted. So we have to keep fighting. But I think that Texas has set a great example for other states to follow. And I really hope that they do. And you know, like I said, and we made a post on Instagram and Facebook, you know, women are still going to need our help. And that's what we're here for. And across the United States, even as these bills are passed, we're still going to have to step up for these women and be there for them and show that abortion really isn't the way to go.
Exactly. I don't know if you know my story or my husband's story, but for me, my mom was actually asked to have an abortion with me and she said no. And as a result, it was basically just her and I for a long time, which I love my mom because, I mean, even then, so she had no parental figures. It was just her. And she was such a young mother that I really do appreciate what organizations like you do, because I know back then, if she had an organization like you guys around, it probably would have really changed our lives, both of us. But also too, I found out later on, my husband, whose biological family is actually from Texas, him and his twin brother were actually adopted out and they were a byproduct of an unconsensual event. And so when people talk about, especially legislators, you know, they say, well, I'm pro-life except, and then they do that exception. They say, well, what about rape or incest? I tell people, you never know who is ever going to be a byproduct of those circumstances. And I guarantee you may have come across someone in your life that was, and my husband's an incredible man. He was given a Bronze Star and a Purple Heart. The guy, I mean, you could not have a better human being. And so when people make those exceptions or don't have the backbone to say, no, this is what I believe and here's why, I think you nailed it on the head. That's absolutely the problem. So I guess my last question for you is, how can people get involved to support your organization? Where can they find out more information and where can they get cool swag? Because I know you guys have good stuff.
Yes. Unfortunately, I'm not even wearing mine today. I usually have some live stuff, but you know, today's laundry day. So let them live. And I know that money can sometimes be an uncomfortable topic as well, but we are 100% donor funded. And because we are providing financial support to women that are facing abortion, that, you know, need to cancel their abortions and have that financial support, we really 100% rely on money. And so, you know, we have our website, which is letthemlive.org. You can find us on social media. We have a ton of followers, which is super cool. We finally got our blue check marks. So you can donate a whole lot of ways. We actually have a fundraiser running right now for a mom that we're counseling named Morgan. She has called Planned Parenthood and she's just waiting for them. They're going to be calling her back to schedule her abortion and financial reasons, you know, that's why she's having this abortion. And so we have a chance to really step up for her. So if you're listening and you feel called, you know, even if it's just $5, you can literally save a life from abortion. as far as our swag, hop onto our website as well. Check out our website. I mean, our website is just really cool. We have spent a lot of time on it. You can see babies that have been saved from abortion. They're all so cute. We have babies that are coming up on a year. We actually have a birthday that's coming up on the 13th. Luca is his name. He'll be turning one. He's a Let Them Live baby. So mom's stories are on there. Our shop, so you can rep the Let Them Live swag. I just did laundry last week. I was counting our sweatshirts that Nathan and I have taken from our shop because we're always taking Let Them Live sweatshirts. We have like 8 of them each. So we love all that swag. So that's all on there.
They can find you at Let Them Live, correct, on all social media?
At Let Them Live org on Twitter and Instagram. But if you just type in Let Them Live, you'll find us. And then also just type in Let Them Live on Facebook and you'll find us. We've got a cute little pink pregnant lady logo. So,
well, thank you so much for joining us today. Again, everyone head over to letthemlive.org. Check out the incredible stuff they're doing. We appreciate everything that you're doing and I hope to have you back on soon.
Yes. Thank you.
Before we go, I want to thank Emily Berning again for such an important interview. And I want to thank you guys so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's show, please leave us a review and rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. To hear more of my episodes and get my weekly newsletter, please go to gingrich360.com/Anna. You can also find me on Parler, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Getter at Real Anna Paulina. And a special thank you to our producer, Drew Steele, writer Aaron Kligman, and executive producers, Debbie Myers and speaker Newt Gingrich, part of the Gingrich 360 Network.